Hi everybody, I'm delighted to be with you today to talk about the SFC's proposed changes to the codes on takeovers and mergers and share buybacks, also known as the Takeovers Code or the Code, which the SFC set out in a consultation paper published in May 2023. The proposed changes mainly involve codifying various existing practices of the Takeovers Executive of the SFC, reducing the number of paper documents required to be published under the codes, and some housekeeping amendments. The text of the proposed revisions to the codes is set out in Appendix 1 to the consultation paper. The consultation closed on the 23rd of June 2023. So turning to the amendments, the SFC is proposing, the first is to adopt a wider definition of the term close relative, which is mainly relevant in the context of Classes 2, 6 and 8 of the persons presumed to be acting in concert and Class 3 associates. The SFC considers the current definition, which covers a person's spouse, de facto spouse, children, parents, and siblings, to be too narrow, risking missing other relevant relationships. The proposal is to revise the definition to codify the executive's existing practice of including in the categories of people presumed to be acting in concert a person's grandparents and grandchildren, their siblings, a sibling's spouse or de facto spouse, and their children. The parents and siblings of a person's spouse or de facto spouse. The revised definition would also clarify that children include natural, adopted, and stepchildren. Applications to rebut the presumption of acting in concert will be allowed, and the burden of proof will fall on the applicant, as is currently the case. However, the SFC says in the consultation paper that it's unlikely to accept arguments that parties are not in regular contact or haven't seen each other for a while as grounds for rebutting the presumption, unless there's also corroborative evidence such as litigation between family members evidencing a breakdown of the family relationship. As the proposed expansion of the close relatives definition would also expand the scope of the waiver from a general offer obligation under Note 6 to Rule 26.1, the SFC proposes that people within the amended definition will be eligible for the benefits of a waiver under Note 6 to Rule 26.1. Fundamental to the Takeovers Code is what happens when a person acquires control of a Hong Kong listed company or other public company. Control for these purposes means 30% or more of a company's voting rights, which are defined in turn as voting rights that are currently exercisable at a general meeting of a company. The question that's arisen is whether voting rights are regarded as currently exercisable if the relevant shares are subject to voting restrictions. The SFC is proposing to amend the voting rights definition to clarify that voting rights are still regarded as exercisable at a general meeting, irrespective of the existence of restrictions on their exercise, where, for example, the restriction arises from an agreement between the parties by operation of law or under a court order. The SFC's rationale is that voting restrictions don't fundamentally alter the rights attached to shares. Voting rights are generally conferred by companies' constitutional documents, and voting rights restrictions, such as those arising under injunctions or shareholders' agreements, rarely remove voting rights from a company's constitutional documents. So a person who acquires 30% of a company's voting rights will have to make a mandatory general offer under Rule 26.1 of the Code, notwithstanding that the voting rights may be subject to an injunction prohibiting that person from exercising them. An exception will be made for voting rights attached to Treasury shares. Turning to shareholders' approval and acceptance. The note to Rule 2.2c of the Code, under which a shareholder's resolution approving the delisting of a Hong Kong-listed company after a proposed offer must be subject to the offeror being entitled to exercise and exercising their rights to compulsorily acquire the remaining shares, is what we're covering here. If an offeree company is incorporated in a jurisdiction without compulsory acquisition rights, the SFC will waive the requirement, provided that the three conditions set out in the note to Rule 2.2 are met. As well as obtaining the requisite shareholders' approval, the offeror has to receive valid acceptances of 90% of the disinterested shares. However, condition 3 to the note to Rule 2.2 is silent on whether purchases made by an offeror and its concert parties can be included when determining whether the 90% of disinterested shares threshold has in fact been met. The The SFC is therefore proposing to revise Condition 3 to expressly include purchases made by the offeror and people acting in concert with it from the date of the announcement of a firm intention to make an offer when determining whether the 90% of the disinterested shares threshold has been met. Rule 211 requires an offeror and its concert parties to have acquired 90% of the offeree company's disinterested shares before exercising its compulsory acquisition rights. The current language of Rule 211 only allows purchases made by an offeror and its concert parties during the period of 4 months after the posting of the initial offer document, together with acceptances, to count towards the 90% threshold. In determining whether an acceptance condition has been met, the SFC considers the current language to be problematic because it differentiates between offers not involving a delisting. For example, a conditional voluntary general offer where an offeror does not intend to exercise compulsory acquisition rights and offers involving delisting, for example, a voluntary general offer seeking to privatize by way of compulsory acquisition. The SFC considers the requirement of acquiring 90% of the disinterested shares under Rule 211 to be equivalent to an acceptance condition. The SFC also considers that acquisitions resulting from the acceptance of an offer and an on-market acquisitions should be treated in the same way. Under the proposed amendment to Rule 211, purchases made by an offeror and its concert parties from the date of the announcement of a firm intention to make an offer until the end of 4 months after the posting of the initial offer document can count with acceptances towards the 90% of the offeree company's disinterested shares threshold for the purposes of the offeror's entitlement to exercise their compulsory acquisition rights. I'm now going to look at Rules 2.2 and 2.10 of the Code. So under Rule 210 of the Code, a privatization by way of a scheme of arrangement can only be implemented if the scheme is approved by at least 75% of the votes attached to the disinterested shares cast at a duly convened meeting of the holders of disinterested shares, and the number of votes cast against the resolution at that meeting does not exceed 10% of the votes attaching to all disinterested shares. However, recent Hong Kong court cases such as Re Cosmos Machinery Enterprises Limited and Re Chongqing Bank Limited have interpreted Rule 210 differently on the required form of shareholders' meetings. The so-called non-prohibition view allows the offeror and its concert parties to vote at a shareholders' meeting held to consider a scheme of arrangement, but doesn't allow their votes to be counted for the purposes of Rule 210. The alternative prohibition view prohibits the offeror and its concert parties from voting. Before these judgments, the executive considered the non-prohibition view to be the correct approach to Rule 210, as it gives the executive the flexibility necessary to achieve the rule's underlying purpose, which is that in determining whether the thresholds under Rule 210 are met, only votes cast by disinterested shareholders should count. The SFC maintains that the form of meeting should be governed by the relevant company's constitutional documents and the company law of its place of incorporation, given that the Takeovers Code is non-statutory and can't override the legal requirements in the jurisdiction of offeree companies, which are typically incorporated outside Hong Kong. The same is true of Rule 2.2, which similarly refers to approval by disinterested shareholders at a meeting. To clarify how Hong Kong Takeovers Code Rules 210 and 2.2 should be interpreted, the SFC proposes amendments to refer to approval by at least 75% of the votes attached to the disinterested shares that are cast either in person or by proxy at a duly convened meeting of shareholders, rather than of disinterested shareholders, and to add a new Note 8 to Rule 2 stating that a duly convened meeting of shareholders for the purposes of Hong Kong Takeovers Code Rules 210 and 2.2 refers to a shareholders' meeting duly convened in accordance with the offeree's company's constitutional documents and the company law of its place of incorporation. The SFC generally allows offerors to obtain irrevocable commitments from shareholders as to acceptance or non-acceptance of an offer, or on voting on resolutions relating to an offer, provided that they follow Note 4 to the Takeovers Code Rules 3.1, 3.2 and 3.3, and practice note 12 on gathering irrevocable commitments. In the light of the market's increased sophistication and the widespread use of irrevocable commitments, the SFC aims to streamline the process by not requiring an offeror to consult the executive when approaching a shareholder with a material interest, that is 5% or more of an offeree company's voting rights held directly or indirectly by the shareholder and their concert parties, and by only requiring an offeror to consult the executive if it intends to approach other shareholders without a material interest in the offeree company. And finally, by limiting the offeror to approaches to no more than 6 shareholders, whether they hold a material interest or not. Turning now to the chain principle. The SFC is proposing to revise the Hong Kong Code's chain principle, which applies where a mandatory offer obligation for a second company, which is referred to as a chain principle offer, arises following an acquisition of statutory control of a company, which I'll refer to as the first company, where a person or group of people obtain or consolidate control over the second company because the first company controls the second company. Note 8 to Rule 26.1 of the Code sets out the 2 key tests for determining whether a chain principle offer is required. These are the substantiality test and the purpose test. If either test is satisfied, the executive will require the making of a chain principle offer. The substantiality test compares the assets and profits of the second company with those of the first company to determine whether the holding in the second company is significant. Relative values of 60% or more will generally be regarded as significant. The purpose test looks at whether securing control of the second company was one of the main purposes of acquiring control of the first company. The SFC identifies several issues in relation to the substantiality test. First, it's unclear which assets and profits line items should be compared. For example, total or net assets, gross or net profit. The SFC said that in practice it considers all these items, and if an anomalous result is obtained, it considers each case on its particular facts to determine how the substantiality test results should be interpreted. Secondly, the substantiality test can't be applied in situations where either the first or second company has net liabilities, a net loss, or breaks even. And thirdly, Note 8 to Rule 26.1 doesn't specify the applicable look-back periods for financial information under the substantiality test. The SFC now proposes to add market capitalization as one of the parameters for comparison when determining the substantiality test in revised Note 8A to the Hong Kong Code, Rule 26.1. The SFC is also proposing to codify the executive's existing practice of looking at least the 3 most recent financial periods when calculating whether the substantiality test produces an anomalous result. And the SFC will update Practice Note 19 to provide further guidance on the executive's approach to the substantiality test. No amendments to the purpose test are being proposed. Now turning to the Takeovers Code offer period and timetable. Many of the Hong Kong Code's obligations are triggered on the commencement of an offer period. The SFC says that offeree companies experiencing financial difficulties and companies whose controlling stake is in receivership often find themselves in prolonged offer periods that make ongoing compliance with the relevant code requirements very difficult. For example, the publication of monthly updates can be unnecessarily burdensome. The fact that a company continues to be subject to an offer period also risks misleading the market into believing that there is the prospect of a takeover offer. The SFC issued Practice Note 24 in November 2022 to give guidance on when an offer period should start when receivers or liquidators are appointed. However, once started, an offer period won't end until one of the situations under the definition of offer period arises. For example, the offer closes for acceptances, lapses, is withdrawn, won't proceed, or if an offer allows alternative forms of consideration to be elected, the last date for making the election is reached. The definition does not give the executive explicit authority to end an offer period. The SFC is proposing to give the executive this explicit power to terminate an offer period, but intends that this power will only be exercised in limited circumstances. When the executive terminates an offer period, it will publish a statement on the SFC's website under the section headed Executive Decisions and Statements and update the offer period table to include the reasons for ending the offer period. Now I'm going to look at the last possible day for day 60 in privatizations and take private transactions under the code. Well, under the existing rule 15.5.2 of the code, the offeree board can consent to the final day for an offer to become unconditional as to acceptance as being extended beyond the 60th day after the posting of the composite document. In privatizations by a board controlling shareholder, rule 15.5.2 allows the offeror to decide whether and for how long day 60 should be extended if the offer is not declared unconditional as to acceptances by the original deadline. Shareholders who accept the offer early, for example, before the acceptance condition is met, are subject to an extended lockup of their shares without any certainty as to when the offer will become unconditional or when the shares tendered may be returned to them in the event the offer is unsuccessful, unless and until they exercise withdrawal rights under Rule 17 if these are available. When the executive has been asked to approve the extension of day 60, it has done so subject to the condition that the extension will not exceed 4 months from the date of dispatch of the offer document. The SFC considers this to achieve a fair balance between an offeror's interest in extending the offer period to fulfill the acceptance condition and the interests of the offeree's company's shareholders. The SFC proposes to revise Rule 15.5 to codify this practice by adding, in any event, day 60 shall not be extended beyond a date that is 4 months after the date of the offer document. Turning now to put-up or shut-up orders. A put-up or shut-up order is issued by the executive on application by an offeree company and requires a potential offeror to either announce a firm intention to make an offer within a set time period, known as put-up, or to announce that it will no longer proceed with an offer, known as shut-up. The purpose of a put-up or shut-up order is to make an offer or make its best offer as soon as possible or walk away from an offer. This prevents an offer period continuing indefinitely, which can be inconvenient for an offeree. However, the Takeovers Code has no express provision empowering the executive to issue a put-up or shut-up order. The executive therefore relies on the spirit of Rule 31.1b and Note 2 to Rules 31.1 and 31.2 as the basis for issuing put-up or shut-up orders. The SFC is therefore proposing to introduce a new Rule 3.9 to specifically empower the executive to impose put-up or shut-up orders in exceptional circumstances if it considers it appropriate to do so. It will no longer be necessary for the offeree company to request the SFC to impose a put-up or shut-up order. A note to the new rule will state that in deciding whether or not to impose a put-up or shut-up order, the executive will consider certain factors, namely the current duration of the offer period, the reason or reasons for the offeror's delay in issuing a firm intention announcement, the proposed offer timetable if there is one, any adverse effects that the offer period has had on the offeree company, and the conduct of the parties to the offer. The new Rule 3.9 will be one of the code rules that will also apply to share buyback transactions and will therefore be included in the list set out in Rule 5.1c of the code on share buybacks. Rule 20.1 of the code requires the consideration for an offer to be paid within 7 business days, following the later of the date the offer becomes or is declared unconditional and the date of receipt of a duly completed acceptance. However, if an offer lapses, the share certificates must be returned within 10 days of the offer's withdrawal or lapse under Rule 20.2. The SFC is proposing to align the timing requirement for the return of share certificates under Rule 20.2 with that for the payment of consideration under Rule 20. In successful offers, share certificates for untaken shares, that's shares that have been tendered for acceptance by a shareholder but not taken up by the offeror, and untendered shares, that's shares that are not tendered for acceptance, represented in the share certificate, which also covers shares that the shareholder does tender for acceptance in an offer, including partial offers, or a share buyback by way of general offer, have to be posted to or be made ready for collection by the accepting shareholder at the same time as the payment of consideration, and in any event, no later than 7 business days after the later of the date the offer becomes or is declared unconditional and the date of receipt of a duly completed acceptance. In the case of partial offers, the deadline for the return of share certificates will be 7 business days after the close of the partial offer. In unsuccessful offers, under the proposed rule changes on the withdrawal or lapse of an offer, the offeror will have to return the share certificates to offeree company shareholders who accepted the offer as soon as possible, but in any event no later than 7 business days after the offer is withdrawn or lapses. That means that the share certificates must be posted or made available for collection by the accepting shareholders no later than 7 business days after the offer is withdrawn or lapses. The same timing applies to an accepting shareholder who withdraws his acceptance after 21 days from the first closing date of the offer, if the offer has not become unconditional as to acceptances. The SFC has seen that the Code's existing timing requirements create confusion as to which day should count as day one. For example, Rule 8.2 uses within 21 days of the date of the announcement, and at the same time, Rule 20.1 uses within 7 business days following the later of. The SFC proposes a housekeeping amendment to clarify that the date of the event is excluded from counting. The complete set of changes to the Code's timing requirements are set out in Appendix 2 to the consultation paper on the Code changes. The SFC also aims to clarify the earliest time the director of the offeree company could resign under Rule 7. The proposed amendment says that directors of an offeree company shouldn't resign until after the publication of the closing announcement on the first closing date of the offer, or the publication of the announcement that the offer has become or been declared conditional, whichever is later. In the case of whitewash transactions, resignations should not take effect until after the publication of the results announcement of the shareholders' meeting to approve the waiver. Regarding the timing of resignation of offeree directors under Rule 7 of the Code, currently the offeree company's directors can't resign except with the executive's consent until the later of the offer's first closing date or the date the offer becomes or is declared unconditional. The SFC proposes to revise Rule 7 to say that an offeree company director resignation can't take effect until after the later of the publication of the closing announcement on the offer's first closing date or the publication of the announcement that the offer has become or has been declared unconditional. Also, on a takeover offer involving a whitewash waiver, the resignation of an offeree company director can't take effect until after the publication of the results announcement relating to the shareholders' meeting to approve the waiver under Note 1 on dispensations from Rule 26. Under Rule 15.7 of the Code, all conditions must be fulfilled or the offer will lapse within 21 days of the later of either the first closing date or the date when the offer becomes or is declared unconditional. In the context of privatizations by scheme of arrangement, this means that the period between the date of a court meeting, which is akin to the date when an offer is unconditional as to acceptances, and the effective date of the scheme may not exceed 21 days without the consent of the executive. The executive has granted waivers of this requirement to privatization cases involving a scheme of arrangement where this timing can't be met due to the court's timetable, which is beyond the company's control. The SFC is proposing to add a note to Rule 15.7 so that the executive's consent will not be needed in cases where the delay between the court meeting and a scheme's effective date is the consequence of the court's timetable. The rule amendment will also streamline the vetting and approval process for a privatization by scheme of arrangement. Moving on to the offer price disclosure prohibited in the Rule 3.7 talks announcements. So Issue 37 of the Takeovers Bulletin, published in 2016, advised parties to maintain confidentiality and take all necessary steps to prevent leakage of information before the announcement of a firm intention to make an offer. If confidentiality is maintained, the offeree does not need to issue a talks announcement under Rule 3.7. The executive adopts a strict approach to the issue of talks announcements to ensure that announcements are not used to condition the market and to mitigate the risk of the offeree's trading price being impacted by the announcement of negotiations, which may or may not result in an offer being made. Where the obligation to make a talks announcement does arise under Rule 3.7, the SFC expects it to be fairly short and to disclose only the fact that talks are taking place. This message has been conveyed and elaborated on in takeover bulletins issued in 2017 and 2020. It won't normally be acceptable for talks announcements to disclose the indicative offer price or the form of consideration where these have been communicated to the offeree board, the reason being that an offer will not necessarily materialize. Market practitioners have sometimes contended that the executive's practice is overly restrictive and have argued that parties should be allowed to disclose a price in a Rule 3.7 announcement if they wish, and that there could be situations where this would be desirable. For example, where there are rumors that an offer will be made at a significantly higher price than the price being negotiated. The SFC considers its existing approach appropriate and proposes to codify the current practice by adding new Note 4 to Rule 3.7, providing that the disclosure of an indicative offer price is not normally permitted before the announcement of a firm intention to make an offer, unless there are exceptional circumstances. These exceptional circumstances may include the need to clarify an incorrect market rumor or incorrect statement in the media, which may be creating a false market in the shares of the offeree company, or where an offeror or offeree company is required by overseas regulatory requirements to disclose an offer price prior to the announcement of a firm intention to make an offer. In these cases, the disclosed offer price will serve as the floor price for any offer that subsequently materializes. The new Note 3 to Rule 3.7 will further say that where a potential offeror makes a statement about the terms of a possible offer before announcing a final intention to make an offer, it will be bound by that statement unless it specifically reserves the right not to be bound. Now, turning to the deduction of dividends for an offer price under the code. In the 2019 Dalian Port Company Limited takeover and panel decision, the panel ruled that the offeror could not deduct the final dividend approved by shareholders of Dalian Port from its offer price in a possible mandatory general offer if it had not reserved the right to do so. Where the deduction of dividends from the offer price is permitted, but the dividend payment is subject to withholding tax, the executive will permit the offer price to be reduced by the gross amount of the dividend received by the shareholder. The SFC is proposing to amend Note 11 to Rule 23.1 and Note 3 to Rule 26.3 of the Hong Kong Code so that an offeror can't deduct from the offer consideration the amount of a dividend or other distribution subsequently paid or payable to offeree company shareholders by the offeree company unless it has specifically reserved the right to do so in an announcement, and where a dividend or other distribution is subject to withholding tax or other deductions, the offer consideration should be reduced by the gross amount received or receivable by the offeree company shareholders. Under General Principle 2 of the Hong Kong Takeovers Code, offerors are normally required to provide a full exit to shareholders on an acquisition change or consolidation of control of a company. The circumstances in which a partial exit for shareholders will be allowed, such as on obtaining shareholders' approval of a whitewash waiver, are extremely limited. Partial offers involve shareholders accepting a concessionary offer for only part of their holdings, which may nevertheless result in a change, acquisition, or consolidation of control of the offeree company in circumstances where the offeror will normally be required to make a mandatory general offer under Rule 26.1 for all but not part of the shareholders' interests. The requirements for partial offers under Rule 28 of the Code are therefore intentionally more stringent than the Code's other rules. For instance, Rule 28.4 limits the extension of the closing date when the acceptance condition is met. The offeror can only declare an offer unconditional as to acceptances before the first closing date or on the first closing date if the number of acceptances exceeds the number of offer shares on such day. In both situations, the offeror can only extend the final closing day to a date not more than 14 days after the first closing date. An offeror doesn't need nor not to extend the final closing date at all, provided the offer has been open for at least 14 days following satisfaction of the acceptance condition. Partial offers are also subject to the Rule 28.5 approval condition, which means that a partial offer must be conditional on obtaining approval of 50% of all independent shareholders if an offer may result in an offeror holding 30% or more of a company. Where partial offers are subject to the approval condition, the approval must be obtained on or prior to the final closing day, and there can't be any further extension of the offer period after the approval condition has been satisfied. The SFC has noticed that the current wording has confused market practitioners. Some have mistakenly treated the acceptance and approval conditions as one condition and concluded that an offer must be unconditional as to both acceptances and approval before Rule 28.4 comes into play. While Rule 15.7 imposes a deadline by which all conditions for an offer have to be met, the SFC recognises that the effect of treating the acceptance and approval conditions as one condition, therefore delaying the offeror's ability to extend the final closing date under Rule 28.4, would result in a prolonged offer period, which is contrary to the rationale for Rule 28.4 and the tighter rules that generally apply to partial offers. The SFC is therefore proposing to amend Rule 28.4 to provide that if on a closing day acceptances received equal or exceed the precise number of shares stated in the offer document under Rule 28.7, the offeror must declare the partial offer unconditional as to acceptances and extend the final closing date to the 14th day thereafter. The offeror will not be able to further extend the final closing day. The proposed amendments will also provide that if the acceptance condition is fulfilled before the first closing day, the offeror must declare a partial offer unconditional as to acceptances on the day the acceptance condition is met, and the offer must remain open for acceptances for at least a further 14 days. If, on the other hand, the acceptance condition is satisfied after the first closing day during an extended offer period, the offeror must declare a partial offer unconditional as to acceptances on the day the acceptance condition is met, and the final closing date can't be extended beyond the 14th day after that. For comparable offers for convertible securities, warrants, and other securities, the codes currently lack explicit requirements for making appropriate Rule 13 offers for these types of securities during a partial offer. This contrasts with the requirement to make Rule 14 comparable offers during a partial offer, which is expressly provided for under Rule 28.9 of the code. One reason for this is that partial offers never result in the privatisation or delisting of an offeree company, unlike general offers. Accordingly, it's not necessary for holders of convertible securities to have a proportionate opportunity to exit the offeree company. The SFC said that some practitioners have contended that Rule 13 comparable offers are required for partial offers, given that Rule 13 refers to, quote, an offer being made, unquote, without specifying whether this refers to general or partial offers or both. All partial offers made since 2011 have included comparable offers for options or convertible securities, with percentages typically matching the partial offer for shares. Given the market's acceptance of appropriate Rule 13 offers applying to partial offers, the SFC is proposing to add a new Rule 28.10 to clarify this requirement. Under the proposed Rule 28.10, when an offer could result in the offeror holding at least 30% of the voting rights and the offeree company has convertible securities, warrants, options, or subscription rights outstanding, the offeror is required to make an appropriate offer or proposal to the holders of these securities to which the Rule 13 requirements will apply. Rule 28.5 imposes a tick box approval condition requiring a partial offer to be conditional on, as well as acceptances, majority approval of the offeree's independent shareholders, which can be waived if an independent shareholder with over 50% of the independent voting rights has indicated approval of the partial offer. However, there's ambiguity as to whether this requirement can be waived when the offeror, together with its concert parties, already holds over 50% of the offeree company's voting rights. The SFC considers that on a strict interpretation, the tick box approval condition will apply to a partial offer in that situation. The SFC is therefore proposing to amend Rule 28.5 to clarify that the tick box approval condition does not apply to partial offers, that is, offers within Rule 28.1a or b. Rule 35.4 prohibits exempt principal traders connected with an offeror or offeree company from voting on an offer. However, it's not whether this rule applies to partial offers. Given that the rules governing partial offers are generally more stringent than the rules on general offers, the SFC considers that exempt principal traders connected with an offeror or offeree company should also be prohibited from voting on partial offers and proposes to clarify this in a new Note 3 to Rule 28. The proposed note would also clarify that partial offers are also subject to Rule 35.3, which provides that shares held by exempt principal traders connected to an offeror must not be assented to an offer until the offer becomes or is declared unconditional as to acceptances. The SFC is also proposing a number of green initiatives to reduce the environmental impact of printing and sending physical copies of documents under the code. The current Hong Kong Stock Exchange listing rules allow Hong Kong listed companies to send corporate communications to their securities holders electronically if certain conditions are met. The SFC is proposing to add a new Rule 8.7 to give offeror and offeree companies the option of sending takeovers code-related documents electronically. It will also amend Note 4 to Rule 8 so that the evidence of the date of dispatch of an offer document, revised offer document or offeree board circular, which must be provided to the executive, would, in the case of electronic dispatch, be a confirmation of the document's electronic dispatch. Practice Note 20, which is a guidance note on announcements and documents under the Takeovers Code, would also be revised to remove the current requirement for submission of hard copies to the executive. Listed companies will, however, need to check that electronic dissemination of corporate documents is allowed under the laws of their jurisdiction of incorporation and their constitutional documents, as any document sent in breach of those laws or the constitutional documents will not be treated as sent under Rule 8.7. In appropriate circumstances, the executive may extend an offer period to allow offer documents to be sent out in accordance with relevant laws and constitutional documents. Rule 8.6 of the codes currently requires documents to be printed and dispatched in both English and Chinese. The SFC proposes to introduce a new Note 2 to Rule 8.6, which would allow issuers to send physical copies of documents in either English or Chinese, as long as arrangements are in place to ascertain the language preference of the recipient. The SFC currently requires unlisted offeree companies, which are public companies within Section 4.2 of the Introduction to the Codes, to publish their announcements in a leading English and a leading Chinese newspaper. These announcements are also uploaded to the SFC's website. The SFC proposes to remove the requirement for publication of these announcements in newspapers, but unlisted offeree companies will still need to send electronic versions of their announcements to the executive, and these will continue to be made available on the SFC's website. The SFC is also proposing to require all submissions, including draft documents, ruling applications, financial resources confirmations, no material change confirmations, and other reports, letters and confirmations required under the codes and practice note 20, to be made electronically by email to the SFC unless otherwise directed. It will continue to accept fees for document vetting and ruling applications by check or telegraphic transfer. The proposals will be affected by amendments to Rules 8.1 and 8.2 to the Introduction to the Codes, Rule 12.1 and Practice Note 20. The SFC will continue to monitor submissions made by fax for a 3-month transitional period, after which fax submissions may risk delays in the vetting process. Rule 12.1 will be revised to require all documents to be filed electronically and to remove the requirement for delivery of 2 physical copies of each final document to the executive. The SFC also proposed a number of other miscellaneous amendments. These include proposing to amend a typographical error in the definition of derivative to make clear that the codes do not and are not intended to restrict dealings in or require disclosures of derivatives which have no connection with an offer or potential offer. The note to the definition will state that a derivative referenced to a basket or index that includes relevant securities will not normally be regarded as connected with an offer if, at the time of dealing, the relevant securities in the basket or index represent less than 1% of the class in issue and less than 20% of the value of the securities in the basket or index. Off-market share buybacks require the approval of 75% of the company's independent shareholders, and the SFC proposes to clarify that for Hong Kong Exchange-listed shares, an on-market share buyback means a share buyback made by a Hong Kong-listed company, made through the facilities of the Hong Kong Stock Exchange's automatic order matching system, in which the company buying back its shares and its directors are not involved in the selection or identification, either directly or indirectly, of the sellers of the shares. The executive has routinely required vendor, offeror, and offeree companies to disclose details of special deals or an appropriate negative statement in announcements of a firm intention to make an offer and shareholders' documents since publishing its issue 48 of the Takeovers Bulletin in March 2019. The SFC is therefore proposing to codify this requirement by including it as a prescribed disclosure under Rule 3.5 and Schedules 1 and 2. These will be revised to include a provision that where a firm intention to make an offer is made, the announcement must include details of any consideration, compensation or benefit paid or to be paid by the offeror or any party acting in concert with it to the vendor of sales shares or any party acting in concert with that vendor. Announcements of a firm intention to make an offer will also be required to disclose details of any understanding, arrangement, agreement or special deal between the offeror and its concert parties and the vendor of the shares and its concert parties and between any shareholder of the offeree company and the offeror and its concert parties or the offeree company, its subsidiaries or associated companies. Rule 22 of the Code requires the disclosure of dealings in relevant securities by the offeror and offeree and their respective associates during the offer period. The definition of relevant securities includes securities of the offeree which are being offered for or which carry voting rights, equity share capital of the offeree company, and in the case of a securities exchange offer, the securities or equity share capital of an offeror or of a company the securities of which are to be offered as consideration for the offer. The SFC is proposing to remove the requirement for the offeror's Class 6 associates to disclose their dealings in relevant securities of the offeree during a cash offer. In relation to frustrating actions, Rule 4 of the Code prohibits the board of the offeree from taking any action to frustrate an offer or which might result in the offeree's shareholders being denied an opportunity to decide on the merits of an offer, except with shareholders' approval. Note 1 to Rule 4 provides that if the offeror consents to a corporate action, the executive may waive the requirement for it to be approved by shareholders. The SFC proposes to amend Rule 4 to clarify that the list of frustrating actions included in the rule, which includes share issues, issues or grants of securities that are convertible into the company's shares, material acquisitions or disposals, and acquisitions outside the company's ordinary course of business, are only examples of events that might constitute frustrating actions and are not a definitive or exhaustive list of the events. The SFC says that the overarching principle to be considered in determining whether an action is frustrating is whether the action results in the offeree's position being materially different from when the offeror announced its intention to make an offer or when the offeror approached the offeree with an offer. Rule 4 provides that the executive must be consulted at the earliest opportunity when the offeree has a prior contractual obligation to take an action and that such actions are not normally covered as frustrating actions, particularly where they are announced by the offeree company before the board has reason to believe that a bona fide offer may be imminent. However, if there are special circumstances, these should be brought to the executive's attention as soon as possible to confirm whether Rule 4 applies. So an example of special circumstances would be where obligations are put in place but are not otherwise enforceable or triggered unless and until a takeover offer is made for the offeree company, such as a poison pill. In these situations, the executive is likely to consider these prior contractual obligations as frustrating actions under Rule 4. Note 1 to Rule 4 provides that shareholders' approval is not required if the offeror consents to the corporate action being taken. To streamline the operation of Note 1, the SFC will amend it so that once the offeror has given its consent, it won't require a further waiver from the executive. Where an announcement is made, it will be sufficient to include a statement confirming that the offeror's consent has been obtained. If no announcement will be made, for example, because the relevant corporate action is not a notifiable transaction under the exchange's listing rules, the offeror's consent to the corporate action will need to be lodged with the executive if there are competing bids. Consents from all named offerors or potential offerors will need to be obtained before the shareholders' approval requirement can be dispensed with. Paragraph 10 of Schedule 1 to the Code sets out certain disclosure requirements relating to the closing price of the securities of the offeree company and the securities of the offeror. That is, if the consideration for the offer involves the offeror's securities. Where the trading of shares is halted during a trading day, the SFC normally requires disclosure of and comparison with both the closing price for the full trading day before such halt and the last trading price immediately before the trading halt. The SFC is proposing to codify this practice by adding a new note to paragraph 10 of Schedule 1, saying that where trading of securities is suspended during a trading day, disclosure is required for the closing price on the last full trading day and the trading price immediately before the suspension. Turning now to the application of Rule 31.1 to whitewash transactions. Well, Rule 31.1 prohibits an offeror and its concert parties from announcing a further offer for the offeree company or acquiring voting rights of the offeree, where this would require the making of a mandatory offer under Rule 26 within 12 months of the withdrawal or lapse of a previous offer, except with the executive's consent. Note 4 to Rule 31.1 and 31.2 further provides that the restrictions under Rule 31.1c also apply to a person who announces a transaction that's conditional on no general offer being required. Where the person does not reserve the right to waive the condition or does reserve the right to waive but doesn't, in fact, waive the condition. The SFC is proposing to apply the restrictions under Rule 31.1 to whitewash transactions so that a transaction that is conditional on a whitewash waiver being granted will be treated in the same way as a transaction that's conditional upon no mandatory general offer being required. So Rule 31.1 is proposed to be included in the list of Takeover Code requirements applicable to whitewash transactions in paragraph 2D of Schedule 6. However, the revised Note 4 would not restrict back-to-back non-waivable whitewash transactions, as it would allow a person to enter into non-waivable whitewash transactions repeatedly, given that no subsequent offers can be made if the whitewash condition is voted down by shareholders. Now turning to the application of Rule 3.8 to share buybacks by way of general offer. In a share buyback by way of general offer, the most up-to-date position of the offeree company's relevant securities must be made known to assist investors in complying with the Hong Kong Takeover Code's requirements to determine whether they are Class 6 associates who need to comply with Rule 22. The Rule 3.8 requirement for offerors and offerees to announce details of their relevant securities should therefore apply equally to share buybacks by way of general offer. The SFC is therefore proposing to amend Rule 5.1c of the Share Buybacks Code to include Rule 3.8 as being one of the Takeovers Code rules that apply to share buybacks. The amendments will also include the new proposed Rule 3.9 in Rule 5.1c of the Share Buybacks Code. For some final housekeeping amendments, paragraph 2a of Schedule 6 states there should be no disqualifying transactions from 6 months prior to the announcement of the whitewash proposals and up to the date of the shareholders' meeting. However, this is inconsistent with paragraph 3, which says that there should be no disqualifying transactions from 6 months prior to the announcement of the proposals and up to the completion of the subscription. The current operating rules regarding disqualifying transactions have been applied since their last amendment in 2005, and therefore paragraph 2A is a typo. This will be amended and aligned with paragraph 3 so that the grant of a Rule 26 whitewash waiver will be conditional on there having been no disqualifying transactions. This will also remove the current limitation to disqualifying transactions occurring from 6 months before the announcement of the whitewash proposals until the date of the shareholders' meeting. So that brings me to the conclusion of the formal part of this presentation. Thanks again for joining me, and I look forward to seeing you again soon. Bye.